I wake up in the morning.
You are listening to Screenfish Radio. I'm your host, Steve Norton. With the release of Lego Movie 2, the second part, Emmett, Wildstyle, and the crew find themselves in the worst possible scenario, when everything isn't awesome. When an attack from Duplo invaders further disrupts their post-apocalyptic world, Emmett must travel to the far outreaches of the Systar system in order to rescue his friends from the unmalicious queen, Whatever Wannabe. Teaming up with the mysterious Rex Danger Vest, Emmett has to reach his friends before Wannabe enacts Armageddon, a disastrous event that could destroy the entire universe. This week, we welcome back Heather Johnson and Alan Scherer to talk about the film's understanding of growing up and the toxic gender wars. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Screenfish Radio. This week we are thrilled to talk about the Lego Movie 2, the second part. And this week we welcome back Heather Johnson and Alan Scherer. Welcome back, guys.
Welcome. It's good to be back. And I was just finishing up playing some Legos, and I'm an amateur builder at this point.
Well, we've got master breaking down pat in this house, and you've got two toddlers. So there was a lot of relatableness in this movie, so I'm happy to be here tonight.
Well, you can build anything, but there ain't nothing you can't break.
My 22-month-old would agree with you.
Well, in the Lego Movie 2, continues the story of Emmett and Lucy / Wildstyle. As the citizens of Bricksburg face a dangerous new threat when the Lego Duplo invaders from outer space start to wreck everything in their path. The battle to defeat the enemy and restore harmony to the Lego universe takes Emmett, Lucy, Batman, and the rest of their friends to the faraway, unexplored worlds of the Systar system in ways that test their courage and creativity. Lego Movie 2 stars Elizabeth Banks, Chris Pratt. I just called him Chris Pratt. Chris. That in no way reflects on my feelings towards Chris Pratt. Will Arnett, Stephanie Beatriz, and many, many others. But before we get started, just a reminder that this podcast is rated S for spoilers. Heather, Alan, what did you guys think of Lego Movie 2?
Ladies first.
Oh, well, thank you. I was thinking you just saw it, so it might be fresher in your mind, where I've had a whole week to think on it, but I'll go ahead. You know, I don't think I had any real expectations other than the first one is so delightful. So the kids were thrilled. They love going with mom to the movies. So that was a treat in itself. I appreciated that, you know, for lack of a better term, it almost felt like a musical. And I loved that because I love music in any type of movie. And it was very bouncy and sparkly. I love the brother-sister aspect of it. Since the last one, we kind of had the father-son. Now we can see the siblings growing up. I think they did a good job of introducing where this storyline was going. And I admit I came out of it kind of having to think a bit. It wasn't as quick of a laugh in some ways. Again, that first one was just so unexpected and delightful for what it brought to animation and the idea of taking something as nostalgic as Legos and turning it into an entire movie. So, you know, over the past 5 years or so, that little bit of that novelty has worn off. But I think the story itself brought a lot to the table that I think we'll have plenty to unpack in the next few minutes.
Well, I think for me, I went in with some expectation that it was going to be at the same level, if not greater. And maybe I was a little bit underwhelmed. There were a couple spots I felt like kind of dragged a little, but it did engage my mind. And I think that was something that really the first movie didn't do quite as well. I left kind of thinking about stuff, and I had a little catchy song in my head, and it was a good way to kind of go through the day, actually.
You know, I laughed a lot. I thought it was pretty smart. It made me grateful that Miller and Lord got fired from Solo, because out of their firing, we got them writing this and working on Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which apparently this film was an absolute mess, and they had no idea what they were going to do with it until the two of them came back and they were freed up because of that. I enjoyed it. I think it was you, Heather, that mentioned something about now we're 5 years in, and I think the novelty has worn off. So they had to come with a better story this time. I find the first one just so sharp and brilliant in a lot of ways. I really still do. The impact of that finale where they, you know, spin it around and pull you into the human world at the time was so shocking that it really brought it home. But now, this is the fourth film in a franchise, and we all know that's going to happen. We all know that there's interaction with the human world in some way. But it was good. Like, my kids liked it. I liked it. Is everything awesome? I wouldn't say it's quite as awesome as the first one. I enjoyed it, and I loved a lot of the humor, but I wasn't as excited about it as when I saw it. And actually, when the first one came out, I refused to see it because I just thought this looks so ridiculous. I think I saw it on video for the first time, and I was just blown away by that, the ending, which was something I didn't expect. But they've just sort of incorporated it into all the films.
Can I add in, though, that the yelling from Will Smith – I mean, not Will Smith. Let me redo that.
What? Okay.
The yelling from Will Ferrell – from off camera was fantastic, because if they did not put in a "where are my pants" line, my kids would have stormed out in protest. So to have that at the very end, like, it was beautiful filmmaking.
Did either of you find it weird that he didn't show up in the entire movie other than a clip from the previous one?
I did, yes. But it still worked.
Yeah, it worked. I was just surprised, because they're obviously still going to have to pay him. Because they used him.
Yeah, but sometimes with him, the novelty is his voice, and you see him in your head. You don't need to see him on screen.
That's true. And actually, one of the things I thought was really funny is President Business keeps making reference to the fact that he's left. He says, "I'm going golfing," and he runs away like twice. It sort of leaves it to Mom to deal with this time. I thought that was really interesting.
Which we didn't even hit on that, you know, as parents, you know, did it get uncomfortable with the kids fighting all the time? It was easy when he could play Legos with them, but when he starts getting all, like, teenager and angsty, you know, did Dad be like, you know what, your mom's going to have to handle this? So, which would be totally not right if that's the case, but I say that as a disclaimer. I think it was an opportunity ultimately to bring in another, like, SNL comedian for the adults.
I do love Maya Rudolph. I really do.
I enjoy the subtle revelation at the end of why Wild Style does not like the song Everything Is Awesome.
She's really running from her past in this one. She's trying to grow up and fight this younger self of her. And I think that was pretty key. You know, she darkens her hair so that nobody knows and everybody thinks that she's older, not older, but more mature than she is. You know, I thought that was kind of interesting.
And Everything's Not Awesome.
You know, it was interesting, because at first I was kind of, you know, we were wondering where they're going with it. And then for them to, you know, kind of turn it into a song, and like, how do you help kids navigate that everything's not awesome when those bubbles start to get burst? When as adults you realize not everything is awesome, you know, how do you cope with that? I kind of felt it was surprisingly deep. And maybe that was just how I was interpreting it. But I'm like, they're really having to ask some tough questions of how do you respond when everything's not awesome?
Yeah. Well, it is a way of growing up, so you are right there.
Yeah, I respected the fact that they went that route. I wish they'd landed the plane a little better. I thought that you're right. They asked some really big questions. And that final song, again, see, they were going to hit a home run with that ending. And I felt like they just missed it. But I did appreciate the fact that they tried to ask that question of what, how do you respond in those moments? And they kind of do. I mean, Rex keeps talking about things like anger was the key to my freedom, war hardens the heart. And I think the line is that it's easy to harden your heart, but to open it, that's the hardest thing you can do. So there's sort of this idea that when things aren't awesome, don't respond with hardness of your heart, which is very biblical, but to be open and reach out. I respected that. I wanted to ask you both what you thought, because expectations of the film, and I always get troubled a little bit by the whole idea of expectations. I know they can sort of tell these things about how much money a movie's going to make in its opening weekend. And they said it was going to make between 50 and 55, and it made 32. And all of a sudden you hear words like failure or failed to connect with people. I was wondering what either of you thought, why it came in under. Is that just across the board an issue with the box office for you, or is it something about the way that this film was made?
I think it has to do with a number of factors. One is that we've had a lot of really funny weather around in the United States, a lot of cold, a lot of rain. People don't want to come out. They'd rather sit at home and binge on Netflix or Hulu or whatever else is out there. And so because of that, you're not going to get the necessarily high dollar amounts. But at the same time, again, as Heather mentioned, you know, this is the fourth in a series. You kind of know what to expect. Where is the twist going to be? And the question is, you know, is there really going to be a twist? In this case, there was, but people may have not thought that and may have thought it was getting old, it was getting tired. And I even wonder if the marketing was strong enough in general. I mean, I didn't hear a lot of things, you know, on TV. I didn't see a lot just walking around looking at magazines, looking on the internet, going to Target, places like that.
And I'd second that, Alan, as far as like the marketing and the advertising. I think the only ads I saw for it were on Facebook. So I didn't see a ton on, and I mean, we watch a lot of kid shows, clearly, when you've got a house of four kids. So there's always a kid channel on. So you'd think that'd be like prime commercial advertising. I don't think I saw the first trailer leading up to it, with the exception of what I see on social media. So I think that played a part of it. Your point about the weather is actually very interesting, because it has been a challenging weather season, from winter to more winter to rain. And I know too, at least where we are in Kentucky, I mean, we had school systems shut down for flu with this late flu surge. So literally people aren't leaving their houses. And if they are, they're not going to theaters where there's lots of germs with their kids. And I know that might seem kind of far-fetched, but now that you've brought it up, I realize I don't remember the last time, you know, with the exception of when I took the kids last week, that was the first time we'd left the house in a group and who knows how long. So I also, too, if I wonder if it's timing to How to Train Your Dragon is playing anything to it. If people are, you know, if they're watching their dollars and their budget, are they waiting for that since the, you know, kind of like within a month or so of each other? I don't know. I mean, I know that we're careful about where we spend. So I'm wondering if it was also just timing.
One of the things that intrigues me, and actually this stems off of what you said, Heather, about saving your money. One of the things that they said is that this one's skewed younger in terms of its audience. I'm wondering if that, now that you say that, I'm wondering if the older teen audience is saving their money for Captain Marvel. Because as we see now, Captain Marvel's starting to build up and build up its steam. And the box office in general has been lagging. Like, everything seems to be just sort of weakly trudging along. Not just the Lego movie, but Lego movie was supposed to be the big blockbuster, right? So I don't know.
Well, and even with Captain Marvel, I mean, look at the lineup of what we've got in the next few months. And that's, you know, a movie a month almost coming from a certain movie production brand company that owns half the world. And, you know, do you really have to kind of like bide your time and be mindful of what you're spending your money on, knowing what's coming up, especially with, you know, I think my generation that grew up with a lot of those movies animated that they're now doing a lot of live action.
Yeah.
You know, I want to take my kids to movies, but later on, a couple months later, have a chance to share in something completely new with them that also is very special to me. So just kind of, you know, literally mapping out how often I can afford to go to the movies is something I have to think about.
So you're fond of Anna and Elsa and Olaf, right?
Oh, I was reading all the conspiracy theories today on that trailer. There are some certain live action ones that I will not be seeing, but I'll see that animated one. and even I'm intrigued by Captain Marvel, and I'm not a huge Marvel person. So I think that, you know, to Steve's point, is totally fair.
I think you guys are bang on in terms of the marketing. I think that now, rather than it being a novelty, it's sort of become more, well, it was always about, but feels more like they're trying to sell toys. Like the first one felt like it was trying to undermine that, but it was novel. It was the first one. But I wondered what you guys thought of the humor, because I've heard arguments on both sides of it being more adult because the kids are growing up, or rather, but it still didn't quite match that. I don't know what to think. What do you guys think?
Well, when it comes to humor, what I saw and heard was two different levels, as you would expect in something like this. And it seemed to me to be a little more adult-oriented, whereas the graphics were more kid-oriented. Hmm. And as a result, you were able to delineate those levels a little bit more. I mean, Batman is still as sarcastic as ever. They brought up references to Hufflepuff. They brought Bruce Willis into this from Die Hard. Obviously, he's still living in the ducts of the ceiling.
That's so good.
And yet you saw graphics where, you know, the Lego friends were out. They're all sparkly, and you have hearts, and you have Duplos, and you have all that stuff. And it looks all pretty and everything. And the kids are going to look at that, and they're going to ooh and ah, and they're going to laugh, and they're going to get that point. But the adults, you know, hey, wow, that joke went over my head. We're talking about, you know, everything about Chris Pratt and all this stuff with him, and we're bringing Batman into this in a white tuxedo, and it's funny.
And I think that's a really good point, too, because, you know, when you bring up the Lego friends, because I was actually so excited to see the Lego friends, knowing that I've got a 10-year-old sitting next to me who is obsessed with Lego friends. So it was almost like I feel like they were trying to make all audience members happy. You know, whether you're the parents, whether you're the younger kid, whether you're the, you know, preteen girl, whether you're the older brother that is not doing a very good job of spending time with his siblings. I think they really tried to pack all of that into one movie. You know, when Maya Rudolph steps on the brick and she's like comparing it to childbirth, I'm laughing hysterically. And my kids are like, I don't know what's so funny about that. And they kind of just look at me crazy. The same thing when Rex Danger Vest is talking about his chiseled features underneath the baby fat, which is what Chris Pratt did from Parks and Rec to Guardians of the Galaxy. So there were all those moments, but then, you know, you have the Lego friends. So my 10-year-old is like, woohoo, you've got silly Batman. So my 8-year-old is like, yes. And then you've got like the Duplos and just the silliness. So the 3-year-old is just riveted to the screen. So I wonder if that attempt to kind of bring everybody into the theater and have them all leave with like that same feeling of enjoyment, did it pull off 100% successfully? And could that also be reflecting the box office numbers? I'm not sure.
It definitely could. I thought of one example at the beginning where Batman started yelling, he didn't weep, and he starts shooting, and it doesn't seem to be working. And he goes, eat more, weep more. He keeps going at it even more. I mean, it's hilarious to me, but the picture is just hilarious for the kids, and they're just going to go rolling in the aisles.
Yeah, you know, like the humor in this one, I agree with you both. I think they were hitting every mark, and I think that's fine. I have to say, and this is going to sound like, well, this is me nitpicking, I admit it, but there were a couple of things that really got me. about this one that was different than the last one, and I felt like they were explaining their jokes. That's why I thought it was more kiddie. Because, for example, you know, Armageddon, you know, there actually is a moment where they spell it out for you. You know, Wild Style's there, and she says, oh, our mom will get in. Our mom will get in. Come on, guys. And it's like, we should have figured that. But they're explaining it for the younger audience, right? Oh, okay. The stepping on the Lego bugged the heck out of me. And it's because it took away from what could have been a really powerful moment. To me, it was like, and I love Maya Rudolph, and it made me laugh. And yeah, comparing it to childbirth, obviously, I have nothing to compare it to, but I'm just saying, like, it was funny. And for me, I thought, oh, man, you deflated the balloon. And there were moments like that. I even didn't mind the fake cliffhanger at the end, you know, where they're all sitting and it's like, no, wait, this can't end this dark. And I kind of wanted it to, but I think that was just me thinking, wow, like I didn't see that coming. But I felt like the first one landed the plane on a lot of those things, like Cloud Cuckoo Land in the first film. Sounds like a ridiculous reference. You know, it sounds like it's a bunch of silly things they came up together. It's actually a literary reference to, oh, I can't remember what book it is, but it's like an old book from like the 19th century. Like, it's a legitimate reference. They didn't make it up.
I feel like as an English major, I should know that, but I don't. Yes.
I also thought that they maybe tried to do a little bit too much with trying to explain certain terms. They needed a Craggle, you know. They didn't have the Craggle, so they had to come with Sistar and Dryar Land. I think we got the picture that Dryar Land is stuck under the bottom of a dryer, but still.
Right. I'm sorry, I'd like to correct what I said before. Actually, having done some research now, the book is not from the 19th century. It's from the 5th century. Aristophanes, a Greek playwright, wrote and directed a drama called The Birds, first performed in 414 BC, in which Pisthetarius, a middle-aged Athenian, persuades the world's birds to create a new city in the sky to be named Cloud Cuckoo Land, thereby gaining control over all communication between men and gods. Like, that's a sweet reference. Like, that's what I would, that's why when they quote unquote had to explain Armageddon, I was actually like sad. I was like, you know, but I get it. That's fine. Anyway, I don't know. That was part of my issue with it. But I mean, you know what? One of the tensions within the film is certainly about growing up. We hear when the film begins in Apocalypseburg that it was a grittier, cooler, more mature place to live. Since we're talking, though, about the balance of ages within the film, how do you think the film portrays growing up?
Well, I mean, from a literal standpoint, in the sense of the dynamic between brother and sister, I feel like that's a very relatable analogy. Because even if you grew up without siblings, you had, you know, hopefully cousins or friends, and there's that time when you grow apart, and it's not always reciprocal. You know, one of you still wants to hold on to the play of childhood, and the other one has gotten older or has newfound interests. And I thought it was portrayed actually very well. I know we had talked about there's more of the human real world element in this one kind of throughout the movie.
Yeah.
So it's not quite as subtle, but I think it made it, I don't want to say better because that doesn't really mean anything, but I think it gave the story some additional depth because you were getting those glimpses into the real world struggle, because why else would this destruction be happening in this Lego world? You know, how long can the planet Duplo invasion really last? So I think it definitely added another dimension to it. The idea of the older brother and the younger sister and the teenage angst of I must have Apocalypseburg and all of the dark and brooding elements, which they really carried over, I think, from the first one and kind of made it its own character, was the dark and broodiness. Mm. And and the battle that is the Emmett still in his head and heart. I think that was actually pretty poignant, and well received for me personally, and the happy younger sister who just wants her big brother's attention and is trying everything she can to connect with him. And I think it's something that's very relatable.
I completely agree with you, Heather, there. One thing I also thought about was with Emmett. Emmett was in Apocalypseburg, in a new town that was, people were more grizzled, they were tougher. And then here he is going up to the coffee shop saying, oh yeah, well, you know, I want this. Oh yeah, and just a little touch cream. And it's like he's not growing up. He's not changing. But everybody around him wants him to change, and they want him to change for the better. But when he turns out to find out, you know, Rex is in essence his alter ego. Well, I just gave up a plot point.
That's okay. We're maybe spoilers.
Changing is for the worse.
Mm.
So I think there's a lot that can be unpacked within that portion of the film.
Yeah, I like where you're touching on there, because I thought one of the things that was really interesting for me in this film was the idea that growing up is tied to darkness. Mm. You know, so much of the film is, you know, wishing that Emmett were tougher, grittier. He came up with the triple-decker couch, and it's got weapons. And they're like, oh, Emmett. And it's super weak, and they go, oh, Emmett, you know. But even the way that is sort of mirrored with the brother-sister storyline, I thought it was really interesting that growing up is almost held on trial in this movie. You know, he says at one point that I grew up just like you wanted. Emmett says, I grew up just like you wanted. And, you know, Wildstyle says that I thought I wanted that too. But there's something she's lost by him going darker. Maturity, you don't need to lose that sense of play when you grow up. And I think that's what the film was trying to get at, you know, especially as the film ends, as they, you know, we see the brother and the sister sort of playing together in this whole new thing. But it was an interesting balance, I thought. And the fact that Chris Pratt parodies every other franchise that he's involved in one character as this dark, edgy guy versus the light, happy Emmett, I just thought was beautifully done.
I'm remembering it as we're talking. So I'm remembering the fade scene with Rex when he's in Dryar with Emmett and Lucy, and he's fading, and all the references to Back to the Future with the time machine. And as he's fading, once again, I'm laughing, and the kids are like, I have no idea what's so funny, because they haven't watched Back to the Future yet.
Exactly.
It was just, he's like, no, I'm cool. It was just so funny.
Well, I saw a lot of also change with other characters about growing up. You've got, you know, Queen Whatever Wanabe, you know, she's constantly changing throughout the film and morphing in positions and such. And Batman changes to the point where it's almost like he's been, oh, what's the word?
Brainwashed?
Neutered.
Look, that song was brilliant, okay? That was the highlight of the film for
me. The Gotham City guys?
Oh my gosh, that was so good.
I think what made that scene, though, particularly memorable is having the Batman movie in your head now every time you see Batman. So when he's in the white, especially, it's like the carryover from the Batman movie. And I just, every time Batman comes on, my 7-year-old, 8-year-old, however old he is, just gets so excited, especially when Batman is flossing. He was like, that was the best scene ever. But it's interesting how he, you know, goes from this dark and brooding to this bright, sparkly character. You'd think if anybody's going to hold out, it's going to be Batman. But he's one of the first to go.
Oh, that honestly, those two musical numbers were so well done. I thought they were just fabulous with Tiffany Haddish, if I'm pronouncing her name properly. But I thought
she was fantastic.
Oh my gosh, it was so good. Continuing on, though, with the brother-sister dynamic, I feel like gender is a huge theme in this particular film, which it wasn't in the first film nearly as much.
Well, you do have Lucy, who is kind of taking the reign of everything over Image. You've got General Mayhem, excuse me, who we have not even talked about yet, voiced by Stephanie Beatrice, who has a big role in taking everybody back. You've got the Unikitty. You've got, you know, Mom. You've got the sister. So you've got a lot of female roles here that are being placed front and center. And I kind of liked it to an extent because I think it gave a different perspective to what we typically tend to think about and see. And then you've got, you know, over here we got, you know, Green Lantern and Superman. I don't know what they were doing. They were all just sparkly to me.
Dude, that same scene has raptors with maracas.
I think the raptors were really the most understated characters in this movie.
There's a lot of development in them.
They love tennis balls.
They do. They do.
I love tennis. It really was a very amusing movie. It's just, there's so much to like about it. And even, you know, as we continue to unpack it, I mean, it's definitely going to be something I'm going to have to add to the collection.
I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong. I just, with this particular film, what I thought was really interesting was it sort of holds, I felt like it sort of held both genders up rather than, you know, I think when we did The Incredibles, we talked about her taking the lead. And this film sort of flipped both things on its ear. Like the first half of the film, it's the girl toys that are the threat. You know, that, and yet the lead female character is the one who's threatened by it. I thought that was really interesting. Like, Wild Style is the dark, brooding one, and Emmett is the one that's sort of happy and lighthearted, and yet by the end of the film, its masculinity or the sort of darkness is sort of held up from a masculine point of view. I don't know. I just found it really, really interesting that way. It was almost like it wasn't about toxic masculinity. It felt like it was about toxic gender. And I don't mean that all gender is irrelevant or anything like that, but just this idea that any stereotype of gender is a problem. I don't know. That's how I felt. Did that even resonate with you guys? Is that something that you saw?
I honestly didn't even consider it.
Okay.
Saying taking myself out of my adult world and just being a kid again, like that stuff just doesn't. It just wasn't coming.
That's fair. Yeah, I've been really interested in this idea lately because I've seen this in so many films. And, I think that this is really relevant to the topic, to the culture today. I mean, you see it even in Wreck-It Ralph. We saw it in the new Wreck-It Ralph, not in the first one. We saw it in Incredibles 2. But this one, to me, felt really balanced. And I thought that was really fascinating to me. Like, you know, even at the end of the film, like you're talking about the colors and you liked it, the themes, like it was just about let's come together and play.
Sounds like Toy Story.
It did. And it felt like that to me. And I don't think it was nearly as good as Toy Story, but that it felt like that to me. And the fact that Emmett is not encouraged to be tougher at the end and it's sort of they realize it's like, you know what? You should stay soft, and I need to stay this way, and we can come together. I thought that was really neat. I thought that was really an interesting play on it.
Well, and I think there are a lot of elements too in, you know, commentary to the world right now. I mean, I don't think we can, you know, ignore that. Even just getting caught up in the film for letting it be what it is.
Right.
You know, this idea that of breaking things and then it becoming something new, and I don't think we can like totally hide from it, accepting people for how they are and not trying to force what we think somebody else should be upon them. And I think that's a lesson that you do try to instill in your kids as well, especially as they're growing and how you love them as parents. But it's such a larger conversation in our context right now that, I mean, I think there's those elements are definitely present.
Mm-hmm. One thing I actually thought of as I was going through this is the concept of, do we need another hero?
Hmm.
We've got a situation right now in our films where we're asking for Captain Marvel, we're asking for the Avengers, we're asking for all these heroes looking around us, and yet, you know, we're seeing The Punisher canceled by Netflix and some other things. So the question is, you know, what does it mean to be a hero? Do we need any more? Do we have enough as is?
Yeah, one of the things they say is that there are no true heroes left. And that is sort of a thing that I saw playing out with in the film, is what does it mean to be one? Where did you feel like it landed on that?
Well, I think it did a good job of, in the end, tying itself up and really showing that, you know, heroes do a lot of things. Besides, you know, punch enemies in the mouth and save the day and win the woman or win the man, whichever one. They help those in need. They build up the weaknesses of others with their strengths and, you know, vice versa. And they also, you know, they really contribute to the welfare of their neighbors, just like, you know, the sister and the brother and vice versa. I mean, we have to be helpers. We have to be supporters. We have to be friends. And if we can be all of those things, then in essence, we are a hero to somebody. And I sort of saw that, you know, in the movie, in the fact of, you know, Emmett being what he could be, even with some of the other, you know, lesser characters. I mean, this is kind of basing itself off of, you know, Romans 15, 1 and 2, you know, saying, you know, we who are strong ought to bear with the failings of the weak and not to please ourselves. Hmm. Each of us should please our neighbors for their good, to build them up. And in essence, that is what, you know, we can do to be a hero to somebody.
Jumping off of that a little bit more, if anybody can be a hero to anybody else, you know, let's not wait until something is destroyed or hurt to be that hero. Let's not wait until the threat is identified. Let's preemptively and proactively live that role. And let's, you know, reach out to somebody getting our attention before it gets hurtful, you know, and I think as a mom, you know, I see that a lot. I don't see the kids coming together until somebody has hurt feelings. And, you know, you see that at the end of this film, you know, as the brother is kind of, as Finn's like remembering things and wanting to kind of restore, let's not wait until we've hurt one another. Let's live into that hero role now.
And if you look in the film, how long did it take for them to figure this out? 5 years. Which is,
oh my gosh, are you going to tell me my kids are going to keep fighting for like 5 more years as they become teenagers?
No.
Oh goodness, my kids still fight.
10 years.
10. Oh, thank you.
It's because they don't have enough Lego, Heather. That's what it was. They haven't reached our Momageddon yet. But it may be pretty close.
It's not. I don't know if it's me they have to worry about. Might be dad. Yeah. Might be dad again.
Ooh. Yeah, it is interesting that sometimes it takes the hurt to realize that we're going down the wrong path. I think you sort of mentioned that earlier. Sometimes it actually takes that moment of hurt that we cause to sort of get at sort of the roots and why we're doing the things we're doing. And this film touched on that beautifully, you know, the idea of them sort of playing together by the end. It took losing everything for them to discover that. But it didn't have to, or did it? Like, that's sometimes, does it have to do that? I don't know.
I think it's a fair question.
Yes.
Man, we went from silly man and sparkles and planet sparkles to heroes and philosophies. I mean, the movie did its job, right? I think it's growing in my esteem as we revisit it. Like I said, I wasn't, you know, bummed or anything. I wasn't overwhelmed.
Yeah.
But now that, you know, kind of remembering and having these conversations, and it's always just, you know, the amazing things that any film, when you just sit and talk about it and open your hearts and your minds to the deeper stories, it makes it all more special.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
Which is why Screenfish does what we do.
This seems like a good place for us to wrap up, guys. Let's screen it or skip it. Lego Movie 2, the second part, screen it or skip it?
You know, when we were preparing for this, I was going to say skip it and then stream it, because it's definitely a great movie that you're going to want to have at home. But now that we've talked about it, I think see it. Give it a chance. Enjoy the day in the theater and just, you know, hang out. So yeah, I'm changing it up. I'm going to say see it.
Ooh. I think in my case, I was going to say skip it as well, because it doesn't quite hit on all cylinders as well as the Lego movie, the original. But when you unpack it, there's a lot there to explore and to think about. So I'll say screen it as well.
Yeah, you know what? I hear what both of you guys are saying, and when I started this, I was thinking I'd say stream it, and I'm going to say stream it because
Steve's staying consistent.
I'm sticking with it. You know, in all honesty, I think the film is fun. It's enjoyable. It's a good kids' film. If you want to go see it, you can. I just feel like this is one that you can take in at home. And maybe that's why the numbers weren't as high. Maybe everybody sort of picked up to that early. It's good. I liked it. I laughed a lot. It's smart. But it just didn't have that I have to go see it vibe after I was done. I'm going to stick with my guns, and I'm going to say stream it later on. You know, watch it on Netflix or buy it on disc or digital when it comes out. But it is a fun ride. It is a fun ride, and it's well written. So thank you, Lord and Miller, and thank you two for coming on. I know that it's always fun when the three of us can get together and talk.
Yeah, it's always absolutely a pleasure.
And for you at home, a reminder that you can catch us on. Hopefully wherever your favorite podcasts are available, Spotify, Stitcher. I've actually found us on my Alexa using Stitcher. Apple Podcasts and Google Play were all available there. If you go to screenfish.net, go to the podcast page, you can download Fishing for More, which are some questions that you can ask and discuss with friends of yours if you've seen the film with them or if you decide to go see the film on your own as well. But thanks again to you both, and for you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.